Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you see how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives and compels us toward gratitude and generosity. Well, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I'm Rex Gorman, and I'm sitting here with the two Toms. I've got
Tom Regan
and
Tom McGregor.
Yeah, it's great. It's been super confusing with you guys, I'm not going to lie, but
that's why I've attempted to have people call Tom McGregor, because I swear, how many times do I, somebody says, oh yeah, Tom's supposed to do this, or Tom's going to, and I'm like, wait, what?
I didn't agree
Was
with
I going to do that? Like, oh, they're talking about McGregor. Can you please just call him McGregor?
I feel sorry for McGregor coming in, because it's like, hey, I've been called Tom my whole life, and then let's go into something else. So I'm going to try to segue that into what we're talking about this week. It's probably given you some doubts about who you are, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't even know who I am anymore. Right. Can you help me?
In all seriousness, though, you know, we've been working loosely through some issues of discipleship and other things we talked about. Holiness, we talked about discipling men and women. We just spent 3 weeks on justice. I would really encourage you to go back and listen to those. I found them really helpful. You know, just touched on spiritual maturity and a bunch of other issues like that. And this week we are going to talk about doubt. And doubt is a big, scary word. But let's spend some time talking about why it comes up and what we can do with it. So I'll throw this out there. Why do you guys think we doubt? How would you define doubt, first of all?
Well, I think there's a measure of uncertainty that we feel about God, whether it's God's character, oftentimes it's his goodness. So I would say there's probably a sense in which we could say there's personal doubts and there's intellectual doubts. Hmm. On the intellectual doubting side, sometimes you wonder, is this trustworthy? This Bible that I'm reading, is this trustworthy? There are many people, many Christians who believe the Bible, but the question and the doubting kind of enters in when you go, is God good?
Yeah.
Is God good? I doubt God's presence with me. Oftentimes it's suffering, and we'll talk about that a bit. But when you experience personal pain in your life, then you wonder like, oh, are these promises about God being faithful and good, are they true? Because he feels like he's not being good to me right now. And so you begin to doubt God's goodness.
Yeah. Anything to add to that, McGregor?
Yeah, I think there's also the existential doubt. And usually it comes in through those avenues, but not always. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what is real? Is there such a thing as a personal God?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely understand. Do you guys think, I don't know. I grew up, and this was not the fault of my tradition. So if anyone that I grew up with is worrying or is listening and gets worried, that's not what I'm saying. But I kind of grew up, and doubt was a bad thing, and people who doubted were bad people. What do you guys think about that?
That's a shame.
Yeah. So you think doubt is kind of a normal part of the Christian life, or?
Oh yeah, like so. I think good doubt, godly doubt, leads us to the truth, and since Jesus is the truth,
would you say that it spurs you on then to investigate because you have to deal with this sort of cognitive dissonance that you have?
Yeah.
So I'm coming from a context where cynicism masquerades as doubt. Everybody's got questions and they're so intelligent,
but they don't really want the answers, do they?
No, you because can hide that's behind actually it. Not very sexy. But you know, if you can be an intellectual who like questions everything, that lends an air of mystery. And I'll throw myself under the bus. Like, that, of course, that's like the modern cool thing to do is to question things. But godly doubt will look differently because it pursues truth.
And I think it's also important to distinguish between doubt and unbelief.
Okay.
Like in the Bible, unbelief is a sin. But doubt is not a sin. And we'll look at this passage with John the Baptist. He's like, Jesus called him the greatest human being, right, that ever lived. Yeah. And yet he doubts. He goes to prison. Well, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. But the point being that unbelief in the Bible is a refusal to believe. To trust.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's not the lack of belief, we would usually call unbelief. But the biblical version of unbelief is a refusal to believe.
Gotcha.
A refusal to pursue answers.
Okay, got it. So I'd say, based on what you said, you've got a godly doubt, which is uncertainty, but a willingness to pursue answers and try to find solid ground. And then there's ungodly doubt that is basically, like you said, cynicism. And that's just, let me float around nebulously and not actually try to put my feet down on anything.
Yeah, it lets you off the hook.
You can, it lets you off the hook. You can use it as an excuse to hide behind things. Well, there's no answers. And so therefore, I can just keep doing what I'm doing.
But I'll skip ahead too.
Sure.
Like when doubt arises because of pain, like think about your relationship, right? Like when somebody that you love and is close to you hurts you, there's a tendency to withdraw. And so we want to be as patient as God is with us and not immediately condemn our withdrawal as refusal to believe.
Gotcha. Right?
Maybe I could just read this passage. This has always impacted me as I think about doubt. So John the Baptist, it's about him. He's in prison at this point because he had confronted Herod about his sin, and Herod didn't like that and threw him in prison. So it says this in Luke chapter 7, starting verse 18. I'll read to 23. The disciples of John reported all these things to him, so all that Jesus was doing. The previous segment was on Jesus raising a widow's son. And John, calling two of his disciples to him, sent them to the Lord, saying, "Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?" And when the men had come to him, that is Jesus, they said, "John the Baptist sent us to you, saying, 'Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another?'" In that hour, Jesus healed many people of diseases and plagues and evil spirits, and on many who were blind, he bestowed sight. And he answered them. So they asked the question, then Jesus performs these miracles. And then he says to them, so he wants them to see all these things. "Go and tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the good news preached to them. And blessed is the one who is not offended by me." So we have in John the Baptist a picture of a man who Jesus says the greatest human being that's ever lived. And if you go to the Gospel of John in the opening chapters, you see John the Baptist point out Jesus and say, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." So if there's anyone on the planet who knows Jesus is the chosen one, the Messiah, it's John the Baptist. He knows for sure. That was his entire commission. That's why it's so startling to us when we read this passage in Luke 7, because this man's whole role was to know Jesus and point out that Jesus is the Messiah. And then now John's going, "Hey, are you the one? Or is there someone else coming after you?" So so he has doubt in his mind whether or not Jesus is the Messiah. And it's really instructive to look at Jesus's response. But I guess before there, I'll go, what might be leading John to doubt?
Yeah, what are the categories of doubt?
What might be leading John to doubt that Jesus is the one?
I think part of this, there was an expectation of what the Messiah would do.
Right.
And Jesus wasn't exactly meeting what everyone thought. You know, I love reading I read the Gospels again recently. I love it. All the parts where it says Jesus ran away and hid because he was afraid they would make him king and stuff like that. So they have this idea of what the Messiah will do. And that's not what Jesus does.
Right.
And so I think that ties over. I think a lot of times doubt comes from unmet expectations.
Right. Yeah. So if you think about Luke chapter 4, Jesus gets up in the synagogue and he reads that famous passage, and the Lord has anointed me. And part of that passage in Luke 4, when he's quoting from Isaiah, is to proclaim freedom for the prisoners. Like that's the role of the Messiah. He's going to set the captives free.
Mm-hmm.
John's living a righteous life. He's doing the right things. Mm-hmm. He's called out the king for his immorality, and he gets thrown in jail. Wait, I thought the Messiah was supposed to be freeing us. So he's not matching up with Jesus's or with his expectations for what the Messiah is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an unmet expectation there. And so we think about, what if God doesn't meet our expectations?
Yeah, well, I think that happens often. There's a lot of, it's sexy to do these deconstruction stories of faith and that kind of thing. And if you listen, I don't want to make light of them. So if you hear me saying that, I'm sorry. But I don't want to make light of these kind of things. But often what you see is someone, comes into Christianity with a certain expectation that if I obey these rules, if I do these things, then I'm not going to have hardships in my life, which is just it's a fundamental misunderstanding of Christianity as a whole. But nonetheless, that's what a lot of people come into Christianity with. And so as a result, when they are great church members, when they're part of a small group, they're really involved in serving, they read their Bible every day, and a friend of theirs gets cancer, or one of their parents dies or something like that, or one of their kids gets really sick. They don't have a category for that, and they're thinking, well, God, you sort of owe me here, and you're not living up to what you've said. So I've seen a lot of that show up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Another unmet expectation could be that we have this promise that God hears our prayers. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you're praying something for years and years. You know, maybe it's infertility. Maybe it's for a child. And then nothing happens. And it's just heart-wrenching for you. And then you begin to doubt, does God really hear my prayers? Like, I thought the word said that he promised to hear me.
Yeah.
He's not hearing me. He hasn't answered me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The expectation derives from, well, I'm praying for something God should want to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not just I think he should want to do it because I think he should think what I think is right is right. But he says in his word,
like, this is a good thing.
This is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So we hunger and thirst for righteousness, and we see a world where that does not exist.
Yeah.
And we begin to doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you look at all God's favorite people, and they're the ones that suffer most. You look
it's true.
And also have doubt. You know, Abraham, hey, I'm going to actually change the world through you, and it's going to come through your offspring. And then Abraham's like, hey, I don't think this is working out the way you said it was going to.
Yeah.
And you look look at Jesus.
Mm.
He's like, man, if there's any other way. I know we've had this plan for a long time right now,
right.
But if there's any other way, and then on the cross, why have you forsaken me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's more than just quoting scripture. I think
for sure
that's an existential cry.
Yeah. I think of even, you know, another Old Testament example is Elijah. You know, he sees this thing happen where he calls fire down from heaven. And then like 3 days later, he's crying in the desert, like, no one is left. And so, like, it's unmet expectations of what the Lord will do. And I think part of that...
oftentimes is maybe we could say personal pain.
Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of ties really in there. Because, thinking of what you said, McGregor, like, of praying for something to happen that doesn't happen. You know, I know a lot of people who have prayed for a long time that loved ones would not pass away from a disease. Or, you know, I even know in my life, like, praying... that my mom wouldn't die, and that didn't happen. And so I think doubt can definitely come as a result of the pain that comes from either those unmet expectations or just on their own when people encounter suffering.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend who some years ago was struggling with insomnia for a few years, and she had little kids, and she was just absolutely exhausted because she's looking at the clock going, I know my kids are getting up and they're running around at like 5:30, 6 in the morning. And she's up, you know, she wakes up at 2 and can't fall back asleep. And so she was just praying and praying, like, Lord, would you just help me to sleep? And she was so exhausted. And then she told me that she began to doubt that God really cared for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she confided in a friend and told her this, that she had some doubts. And that friend rebuked her for having doubts about God's goodness.
Yeah.
Because people want to protect God's character, right? But...
It's like Job's friends.
Yeah, it's like Job's friends. Yeah. Miserable comforters, right?
They were fine until they opened their mouths. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
No, yeah, I think you're right. And it's, I don't know. I think we think, human beings think in systems and we shortcut things. And that's fine. That's like the way that we're, you know, supposed to work. Like if I push this button, you know, my computer will turn on. I don't have to think about all the stuff in between. Mm-hmm. Or if I wake up and I do these exercises or whatever. I mean, so I think it's the same thing. You know, sometimes on accident, we kind of go on autopilot and create these systems. And suffering is usually a disruption of that.
Yeah. Right.
So
personal pain, unmet expectations, I think on top of all that, you could just have some unanswered questions. We're just finite, right? We're limited. We don't have all the answers, but we like to have answers. But omniscience doesn't belong to us. Omniscience belongs to God. Like if he wanted us to know everything all the time, he could tell us, but he's chosen not to.
Yeah.
Right.
I think to me, I don't want to say most exciting, but I'm going to say the most exciting doubts to me are intellectual, because it means somebody has been wired to be curious, and there's nobody that can exceed the expectations of a curious person quite like God. and suffering, because
that's
I think
point. That's tweetable right there. That's awesome.
The doubt that comes from suffering has the potential to lead to the deepest intimacy where God meets you in the most vulnerable place. Mm-hmm. And that's powerful.
Yeah. Your doubt can be a catalyst for growth.
It definitely can.
If you go in the right way and you don't become cynical and right.
Expectations are hard because it usually means we need to change our expectations.
Yeah. Right. And so I think it's really important that, so just the other week I was having a conversation with and I think I referenced this in a sermon, an older Christian brother who had to face both triple bypass heart surgery, and at the same time found out that he had a brain tumor. And so as I was listening to him share, and he's struggling, he said, why did God let this happen to me? And he said, I've been faithful and I've given myself to him. And so in that moment, I'm not trying to, you know, like correct his, his bad theology right there. But but in my mind, I'm thinking, God has never promised us. There's a difference between we need to align our expectations with God's promises. Yeah. God actually promises us pain in this world. Mm-hmm. You know, that we're going to experience pain. Not that I'm gonna zap you and I'm gonna give you pain, but he does. We live in a broken world. The Bible is very clear about that. And so sometimes what happens is we feel like God's let us down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in our honest, more sane moments, when we can kind of get through some of that existential pain, is we have to really come to terms with, have I had expectations of God that of things that he hasn't promised? Mm-hmm. Like, he never promised to keep us perfectly healthy. He's never promised to keep us away from pain.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where there's a nexus in that that personal experience and expectation with the sovereignty of God. Mm. And I think that there's a lot more mystery in that doctrine than I'm comfortable with.
Sure.
Like, how could God allow this to happen? Or did he cause it to, you know, and a lot of those questions, I've learned by reading Job a lot, are not super helpful.
No, they're not.
And the doubt that expresses itself as unmet expectation is awful, often the cry of pain.
Right. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Well, I think of what Darren said, even in this past week's sermon, you know, talking about Achan, and that's a hard passage. And at the end of it, Darren mentioned, you know, God's ways are mysterious. Mm-hmm. So there's not necessarily, I think there's often, again, back to systematizing, when we hit suffering, we've been, I don't know if it's just because the songs we sing or the stories we read or whatever, we think, oh, well, I need to like find the reason for this and then I can tie a bow on it and move on. And that's not,
had an explanation, you're not necessarily going to like it.
Right? No,
God gave you the answer for why, you're not necessarily going to like it. And we somehow have fooled ourselves into thinking that if I just had an explanation of the why
then
for my
okay.
pain, then I'd be able to move on.
Yeah. No.
What if you got the explanation, you're like, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's not a good enough reason.
That's not a good answer. Yeah. But I think, like, so going back to the story of my friend who was rebuked by her friend for expressing her doubts, it's really instructive and insightful, I think, to look at the response of Jesus to the disciples of John the Baptist who came. He doesn't respond, are you kidding me? Like, if anyone in this world should know who I am, that I am the chosen one, it should be him. I cannot believe he even sent you guys.
Like, bro,
this guy is my family member.
Yeah, bro, you leapt in the womb. Come on.
Yeah. He responds with patience, right? He doesn't shame John. He actually reassures him. He says, okay, I'm going to. He responds with patience, and then he demonstrates reasons to trust in him. That's what I love about Jesus. That's what I love about our picture of God in the scriptures, is that he's so accommodating to our human weakness. Like, you notice these things in, like, the story of Gideon? When Gideon says, I don't want to go, and he asks for the fleece, and sometimes we take that to mean, like, hey, we should pray for the lay a fleece out. It's descriptive, not necessarily prescriptive, right?
Yeah.
But God is so patient with him that he actually is willing to condescend and to come down to our level and to accommodate to our weaknesses and to our doubts. And so he's willing here, Jesus is willing here to accommodate to the legitimate questions that John is facing. He doesn't shame him. He says, I'm going to provide you with reasons to trust in me. And what he does is he does these miracles and he sends the disciples back to tell John these things, right? Mm-hmm. Because what he's doing is he is demonstrating that he is in fact the promised one. Mm-hmm. You go back to the messianic passages in Isaiah and you see that all the miracles that Jesus is doing, that's what Messiah does. So in effect, he's saying to John, yes, I am the one. He doesn't rebuke him. He gives him reasons to trust in him. And so God has given us in his word many good reasons to trust in him. And he demonstrates his faithfulness and reasons to trust him in our personal lives when we see answered prayer, when we receive his strength to endure through pain and suffering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also like he, you know, he doesn't just, I don't know, we Christianify a lot of things and he doesn't just say, well, tell John to pray harder.
Right.
Or tell John to, you know, spend more time in scripture. Well, those things are helpful. Right. Like sometimes there's a, you know, he gives him obvious examples and says, tell him what you see. Investigate this and tell them what you see, basically. Right. It's like, lean into this.
Yeah, press in.
Press in. So I think that, I don't know, and maybe it is, I don't, maybe I'm having issues and I'm dealing with them in front of you guys, but you know, I was talking to a Coney the other day and he was saying
Bacon E, pastor of Bacon.
But he, you know, we were just talking about growing up and doubts and facing doubts in that way. And my antidote for doubt was basically if there was something that I found troublesome, I just didn't look into it. I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to sweep it under and put it in the closet and just not think about it at all. And that's not what we're called to, you know. We're not called to a blind faith. I know that that's a cool band, but like we're not called to a blind faith in that. You know, we're called to, Jesus tells him to see what yourselves, like the whole book of Luke that we're reading from, you know, Luke is writing for the sake of this person that they would believe. You know, here's all this hard evidence that I'm putting before you. So
yeah, he actually says in the very beginning, I've carefully investigated all this. This is eyewitness testimony so that you can know this is true. It doesn't begin in a land far away, once upon a time, like in a land far, far away. No, he actually said, I've written these things down so that you may know, have certainty about the things that you've been taught.
Yeah. At and similarly in John, go ahead. Staring contest. Jinx. Are we going to say the same thing?
No, I was going to say, I think part of our impatience with suffering is not just because it's uncomfortable and difficult, and it is, but it's because we read these narratives and forget that it's a narrative. And so Luke has arranged his material for a theological purpose.
Right. Yeah.
And he's smushed things together. And like, you don't get a sense of the timeline so much, but like, Job is a great example. Like, if you read through the narrative, you realize that his suffering goes on for a long, long time, probably years. But in the book, you could sit down and read it in the afternoon, and it's like, oh, that's got a tidy ending.
Yeah.
Like, I know the answer.
Yeah. And it doesn't really have a tidy ending, though.
Well, I mean, depending on how you read it, but I think it's pretty tidy.
Okay.
But anyway, you know, but God never shows up and gives him answers.
That's more what I mean when I say there's not a tidy ending.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
There's not an explanation. And I think what we can do best when people have doubts is to help them think theologically, for sure, but then also to be a presence with them and walk through that with them. Whether it's an intellectual doubt of like, man, I don't know about the answer to why there's like a weird fossil record or whatever. Let's discover it together.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever it is. I pulled something out of the hat there. But, you know, God shows up in our doubt just like Jesus here. He's not going to turn to John's guys and give them a pat answer. He's not going to shame them, but he's also not just going to be like, well, obviously, and pretty soon I'm going to go to the cross and prove it to everybody.
Let's say someone's listening to this, they're having doubts about something, like whether it's super broad, like, I don't know if any of this is real, or something super specific, like, hey, this passage really bothers me and I don't know why, or I don't see the validity behind this, something like that. What should someone, you know, in light of what we've said, in light of the way we've seen Jesus respond to doubts, how would you guys encourage someone who's doubting? What should they do with their doubt?
I'd say that they should not run from it, not sweep it on the rug like you talked about doing, but pursue it. Let your doubt be a catalyst for growth, right? Sometimes the times that I've felt like I've learned a lot is when people come to me with really hard questions. And what does that do to you? That makes you go and search for answers, or you have to teach something. You feel like you benefit more than the students that you're teaching, right? And so like press in and let your doubt be a catalyst for growth. And I would say press into the Bible. Now, interestingly, Jesus doesn't, you know, unroll the scroll and quote passages necessarily, but he's expecting that these miracles that he's performing in front of them, they're familiar with the Hebrew scriptures.
Yeah.
They're going to go back and hopefully talk to John. Okay, all these things that we saw Jesus do, these are the things that we see in the scroll of Isaiah, right? Yeah. So you press into the Bible, I think, and look for answers there. But I think you also pursue Jesus in community. I think it's instructive that John actually serves as a good example of what to do with your doubts. He doesn't just languish there in prison and just be like, oh, well, I guess whatever happens, right? No, he sends his friends. Like he uses his friends to help him figure out some answers. And I think that's kind of a good picture for us. Like we can lean on our friends, our Christian community, to help us process and work through some of these doubts.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say, we talked about this a little bit in the spiritual maturity and the Christian maturity podcast, but isolating yourself is basically never a good idea in the Christian life. You're completely right. And I think when we talk about pressing into the Bible, part of that is like what you said earlier, McGregor, is changing those expectations that we have to fall under the authority of God's promises. Mm-hmm. You know, because if I'm believing that God has promised me something that he hasn't, then that can wreck me. But if I'm investigating this, I'm looking into this, and I'm seeing what God actually has promised me, not only will that basically deflate these false things, it'll also reinflate me in a better way. You know, I'll understand what is there, what joy is basically irremovable from me as a result of this.
Yeah, I think there's a third ingredient. You see it here in the text, but then you also look through the whole of the witness of Scripture, and you see it, and that's the relational aspect with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
John doesn't send his buddies to go talk to Jesus's buddies.
Yeah.
He, as much as he can, he's talking directly.
He wants to hear from Jesus.
Yeah, totally. Mm. And I think that's because John expects the answer to be a confirmation.
Yeah.
But he feels connected enough in the relationship that he doesn't have shame. And I think one of the things that comes up when people are met with rebuke or anything else, silence, because of their doubts, it develops the sense that I have to hide this stuff from God. Mm-hmm. And if there's anybody that can handle our doubts, it's the God of the universe.
Yeah.
And he wants to know about it. And so, man, tell him what your weird expectation is about getting that new Tesla or whatever, you know, like, you know, hey, I thought you were going to do this thing. And I don't understand. Pray with community,
yeah.
So that you're not alone in it, but like recognize that we have no shame, before the Father, right, because of what Jesus has done.
Yeah. I think, that's a great word. I think of guys that I've kind of been walking through stuff with in the past, and they'll come to me and say stuff like, man, I'm having a really hard time reading the Bible right now. Mm-hmm. Or like, I'm having a really hard time praying, 'cause I don't think God hears me.
Yeah.
And my response, they usually hated it, but it was like, well, have you talked to God about it? Like I know that like the last thing you want to do.
That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah,
I can't.
Yeah. But like that's the thing. He cares. Like, you know, if you say like, I'm having a hard time talking to God right now, it's like, well, that doesn't matter. Like, I can't do anything about that. Yeah. Like, you know, bring that before him. Same thing with doubts. It's like, you know, Lord, I'm having a really hard time taking you at your word here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But God can handle that. We don't have to. Part of that's, you know, ideas of prayer, like that we have to bring this polished thing before, but in reality, that's not the case. Like, yeah. Intimacy with somebody allows transparency, you know? So I could be transparent with God with my doubts, whether that's mm-hmm. like, you know, something like, hey, God, it's really bothering me that, you know, this thing didn't happen and it seems like it should happen, like looking at your word, yeah. Or something really, you know, exacting and razor edge, like a theological question, like, God, I'm really bothered by this. And
I found
personally,
like, when I process those things by reading the Bible, by praying, and by doing those two things together in the context of community,
mm-hmm.
Without knowing it, either my expectations change or the priority of my curiosity changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm no longer quite so troubled by whatever it was that seemed so mm-hmm. important.
Yeah.
In some way, it, like in retrospect, I see how God moves and changes me through the process of doubt to give me greater confidence, even if he doesn't answer any of my questions.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe the theme, recurring theme here is to press in.
Yeah.
Just press in and not retreat. And I think maybe, I don't know how long we've been going here, but maybe toward a concluding thought here is that I think there's comfort in knowing that we are saved and sustained not by the strength of our faith, but by the strength of the object of our faith, mm-hmm. who is Jesus. And
absolutely.
So have this, you know, illustration in my mind that, let's say you're in a small plane and the plane, the engines go up in flames and the pilot says, here, put this parachute on and jump out, count 5 seconds and pull the parachute. And so you do, and you may have like zero faith that you're going to live, right? And yet you pull the cord and you make it down safely. So in the end, you weren't saved by the faith, the strength of your faith in the parachute. You were saved by the parachute. Mm. Similarly, even if your faith in Jesus is wavering because you have doubts, the good news is that your salvation and the sustaining power for your life is not dependent upon the strength of your faith in him, but on the strength of Jesus. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So I find comfort in that. Like even at the end of 2 Timothy, he says, if we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. So even in our wavering, he remains unwavering, and he is strong and can bring us through these things.
Yeah. Well, that's great news. That's probably a good place to wrap it up. Well, guys, thanks for listening. We've gotten a lot of feedback on these. If you have questions about anything in particular, you know, I'd say specifically in this case about doubt, if you need help processing doubts, reach out. We probably have some resources we could point you towards. But also, you know, the main resources we're going to point you to is towards your Bible and then also towards community. So we'd encourage you to if you're in doubt right now, to press into Jesus and to doubt. Well, you know, basically look for answers, do these things because they're going to be there. But if you have questions about anything in particular, want us to cover a topic or anything like that, we might do a question and response podcast in the future. Reach out to podcast at imprintchurch.org. Other than that, we will see you next week.
We'll see you.
Bon voyage.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.